I'm Nicholas Gilbert, here joined by Michael Senoff of HardToFindSeminars.com, and we're on with Greg, who is founder and CEO of It's a Search Engine Optimization Firm, and he's going to share with us today the secrets that he's learned for search engine optimization. Greg, how long have you been doing SEO?
I've been running in the web marketing field for around 6 years now.
Okay, and who are some of the notable clients you've worked for?
Military.com. I did some outsourcing for SEO Inc., a number of large hotel chains that I'm working with currently, and many other sites which are probably a little less well-known. I've worked with, in one fashion or another, way over 100 different websites. I've achieved top rankings for at least 40 or 50 of them. A number of them weren't SEO clients at the time.
How did you get into this whole SEO game?
Honestly, 6 years ago, I was living in Colorado Springs, and we started a company based solely on doing SEO-friendly link exchange. I didn't know all that much about SEO. I had basically one of the old-school gurus teaching me as I went along, but we ran links for most of the companies I've mentioned and had great results.
So you had them as clients?
Yeah.
Okay.
Have you ever had any number one rankings?
I've had quite a few. I had page one, position one for the term Army in Google, Yahoo, and MSN. We beat GoArmy.com for about 6 months. Now, my client was an affiliate for GoArmy, so after a couple months' time, asked us to remove some of our neat little options we did and bring them back down underneath them.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
That'd be interesting. You're actually too good for them.
Yeah, they got really upset with him. Now, he was part of the military. He was actually active military, but he was running recruitment. That's what Military.com does. There's Military.com, USMilitary.com. They both do recruitment.
For the average business out there who's got a website, why should someone even consider search engine optimization? And is search engine optimization something that is going to be too expensive for the average guy? You know, how much expense is involved, and why should someone consider SEO now and especially in the future as the Internet develops?
Well, there's a number of different reasons, I believe. First off, I don't think SEO solely should be used as a marketing tool. Now, if you combine it and have a well-rounded marketing approach, that's a different story. But SEO is a very important part of that. The reason being is that with pay-per-click or paid contextual advertising, banner marketing, email marketing, there's that incredibly long-term overhead involved. You've always got to be able to pay your listing to your email client, whoever it is that you're going through. With SEO, you can set in motion over a period of a short month, 2 months, something which will be long-lasting, dependable income. Now, doing it alone is great, but if you add all those other things I mentioned, you're going to have not only the income from your SEO, that constant flow of organic search traffic, but you're going to have those spikes from your banners and those great moments where email brings in over 30% hits. And I work for a corporate company now that does a number of different marketing venues. And what we do is we take every marketing approach there is, you know, and SEO is always the groundwork for it.
Is it affordable for the average business, or do you really have to have some deep pockets to do it right?
Honestly, there are many SEO companies out there who will dig into your pockets for months and months and months and months. And honestly, most of the time, they're just taking your money. A lot of the tricks that I know in SEO, anyone can implement themselves. Now, setting up a full plan, that does cost a little bit. But for just SEO, you're not going to lose yourself in that aspect. You're not going to lose a whole bunch of money into it.
Now, the first thing that I think when you hear SEO, and you know, any internet marketer out there knows that you need SEO or they want SEO. It's a very high demand product or service to sell, and there's a lot of fraud within SEO. So how does the average businessman who's on the internet differentiate the scams from the real McCoy?
Watch out for people who claim or guarantee that they're going to give you a position in an incredibly short time. Watch out for people who are accepting all of the money they ask for a plan up front without showing results before finishing the job. I mean, you've got to really interview these SEO people that you contact and say, let me see what you've done in the past. Let me see exactly what you're planning on doing. Show me in writing the plan you have, how much it's going to run you, and don't ever give all your money up front to somebody because they could just be sitting on that cash and you'll never get it back.
What are some of the most common mistakes the average website guy makes with his SEO?
Misrepresenting himself, that would be one, or itself. Having a site which doesn't target any one particular thing. Niche industries are becoming more and more important. You can have a site that caters to shopping in general, like an eBay, but you may never get up in the rankings because you're too widespread. You don't have a single theory or a single key term or a single set of terms to go by. So misrepresenting yourself, I'd say, is one. Another one would be all forms of spam. That's email spam, all your keyword spamming techniques that people use, all of that is definitely something you should avoid at all costs. Choosing an SEO company before learning who they are and understanding more about them is a very bad thing, because you'll get involved with an SEO company that is relatively fly by night and will disappear on you with your money in hand. That's another big mistake. Don't be an affiliate unless you're going to make sure that your content is original, that you're selling, even if it's someone else's product, you're selling it as yourself, not just adding links to some engine which goes nowhere. And to come up with a fifth one, if you're going to get involved in the web industry at all, you have to be sure that you've got everything laid out in front of you before you even step foot into this world, so to speak. Because if you're not running every part of this correctly, you're going to lose money and not make money and be turned off forever onto a market which is growing every day.
A number of things contribute to what spot you show up on the search engine. How much do you think PageRank weighs into that?
It's a pretty heavy question, to be honest with you. Starting 6 years ago, PageRank and position were almost perfectly correlated. I could say that I have a 6 PR, which meant I'd be high up in the rankings. But I don't know if you know of the Google Florida update, which was an update where they changed the algorithm. They changed the way they look at websites. Now, PageRank still plays a part. You won't see too many zero PageRanks up at the top, but you will nowadays see many more 3 and 4 PageRank sites up towards the top of the rankings. I think what Google has done is they've almost segmented to where PageRank is more of inbound, outbound links, and your position is based more on your keywords and the way you've positioned yourself on the search engine organically. It's important, but not as important as it used to be.
Okay, and the page rank that goes from 0 to 10, and there's only a couple sites on there that have 10. One of them is Google.com, of course. What's the highest you've had a page rank at?
I've had a page rank of 8. That was the highest page rank I've gotten. That site, I was pushing 4 and 9, and I got 2 and 8, and that's about where it stopped. But during the time that that site had an 8 PR, I was getting in an easy 2,000 unique hits a day. I was going through, I'd say, $15,000 to $20,000 worth of business each month. You know, a page rank of 8 is not going to get dropped in the rankings, or at least wouldn't have back then. Nowadays, you never really can tell which way page rank is going to take.
Let me ask you this. When someone does a search on Google or any other search engines, how do you compare what gets more hits, the natural listings compared to the advertised listings, like on Google on the right side?
I do major analytics reports as part of my corporate job and part of my business here. And I can tell you right now that pay-per-click, impressions to clicks, maybe you'll get 1,000, 2,000 hits a month from. While organic, on the other hand, I can tell you one particular travel-related site that we have in my corporate and firstmarketinggroup.com, which is our corporate offices, we have, I think, 15,000 unique hits a month come from organic traffic in comparison to 1,000 from pay-per-click.
Now, over the years, as Google was constantly changing their algorithms, how many major changes have you seen occur over the years you've been in the SEO business, and how much more change do you see down the road? Any forecasts on that?
In the past, I'd say 6 years, I believe I've seen that I can honestly say are definitely changes. I've seen major changes. I've seen maybe 3 or 4 in the past 6 years, the biggest being the Florida update, which kind of changed the entire market around. For quite a while, pharmacy sites and things of that nature could not even get ranked due to that update. I think, like I said, maybe 3 or 4 major changes. Now, there have been some minor changes, and of course, once a month, maybe more, you'll see Google run through your site, check things out, maybe adjust what's going on, but those aren't considered algorithm changes. Those are just simple updates to their index. In the future, I don't know if I can say for sure, but I've been noticing a trend in the way people are marketing on the web, and it seems to be almost stabilizing. If they do make any changes, it's going to be minor changes, slight tweaks to remove spam, keyword spam. Perhaps thin affiliate sites may get dropped a little more, but overall, I think they've really stabilized the way they want their engine to read results.
All right, and what was this Florida update? Why is it called the Florida update, and how did it affect the search engines?
They called it the Florida update. Well, SEOs called it the Florida update because right around the time that the Florida voting scandal happened, if you remember, where voters were kind of feeling they got screwed, sorry to use that language, but they called it the Florida update because it was almost the same thing. All of a sudden, the voting got turned upside down, and things were not working the same way for many, many SEOs. The methods that I've used, though, actually were able to break through that without any major trouble. Clients that I had during that update didn't see any major drops, maybe a position or two, but no page-wide drops like most of my associates.
If I don't really have any any links now from other people. What's the best way to get some links?
Links. Well, to be honest with you, you can judge that on how big your site is. If you're running a small site, you want to get ranked for maybe one term that's not hard hit. Going out and finding links by hand would probably be the greatest way to do it. Just go out, find sites that are relevant, that are content rich, that don't have any spammy keyword content, and just contact those webmasters and get your links. For larger sites, now we're talking sites that need directories that want to get major key terms for, let's say, Florida travel, which is a huge market. You're going to need to use a tool which will give you relevant key terms. Now, I have links up on most of my sites regarding IDP and Aurelis. I don't know if anyone here knows that. IDP is Internet Business Promoter. It's a tool I use to simply gather relevant link partners. Now, I still contact them by hand. I don't use them and spam them, but I use it to gather more stuff than I could possibly find on my own.
What do you find is the most effective way in acquiring a link when you do it personally? What do you do? What's your method or system of doing that? By phone, by email? What's worked best for you?
I use a combination of both. Now, when I was running our link exchange company, we had 8 or 9 people running 8-hour days doing nothing but link exchanges. And you can go to a site that looks relevant, that has a link directory, but yet they'll have no contact information, which I'm sure you've seen before. In situations like that, I would either fill out a form if there was one or try to find a phone number and call through. I always use email first because you'll get a lot of people who are just like, okay, great, link exchange, and over and done with. But if you really want a link on a specific site, let's say you see a 5PR that's relevant that has link exchanges and they don't have the right kind of contact information or you can't seem to get through, go ahead and call them.
What do you say in that email? What magic words have worked the best? I'm sure you guys tested this.
Yeah, well, there's a number of different methods we used. One was the friendly method, which was basically, hey, you know, I own a website. I'd like to link with you. And, you know, a lot of people will get a million link exchange requests a day from farm sites who will send out the same templated nonsense email 1,000 times a day. I get them in my inbox all the time. But when you see somebody that says, you know, hey, my name is this, and I just think your site's really interesting and was wondering if we could get a link exchange, it looks more personal. And I think that personal method is usually the best way to grab somebody's attention.
And then the phone method?
With the phone, it's the same thing. Don't call up sounding like you're some giant farm company that's doing nothing but getting irrelevant, unrelated links. Just tell them that you appreciate the content on their site, you like what they are, that you think that you're relevant with them, and that they would be a good match.
Let's say they say yes. So then do you have everything prepared in a letter to send them? Let's say they say yes, I'd be glad to link. How do you take it from there to make sure that they act on what they say they're going to do?
Honestly, if you're interested, if you've spoken to the person, try to have their link up on the site already. And when you talk to them, either send them the email that says, here is your link, or tell them, you know, give them your URL and the path to your link directory or your links page, and tell them, I've already put you up. I was just wondering if I could get a link back. They say yes, send them your link information. That's your anchor text, your URL, and your description.
Now, when you send them to your page, you know, the page that you're linking to them, do you qualify the link that it's a good page to be linked on, letting them know that it's not just some junk page, it's on the site that's not going to get any kind of results?
Honestly, if they don't know anything about search marketing, then they're going to wonder, what's this going to do? Are you going to take business from my company? And if they look at their link on your site and see this well-placed, good-looking link on a page that's indexed by Google that maybe has a 2-page rank or a 1-page rank, even just a little bit of page rank to show that it's improving, if any of those factors come into play, they'll be more apt to do it.
Okay, that's important.
When looking for sites, do you want to, like, go for the goal and find people with, like, a 7 or 8 page rank, or do you want to go about the same as you are, or 1 or 2 higher, and is there any page rank to avoid, like, do you want to avoid 0 or 1?
It's always great to have high-ranking link backs to your site, but often difficult to find a page rank of 7 or 8 who will actually link back to you. More often, you'll find 3 or 4 sites, page ranks 3 or 4, who will. Now, links and page rank, I still believe, are extremely tightly knitted together in Google. So when I mentioned PageRank isn't as important earlier, it's still important in the link exchange community. It still shows relevance. Try not to exchange with sites below a 2-page rank or sites that are not indexed at all. We're talking the ones that show up not applicable or maybe doing a 1 PR and have been up for a while. These sites, more often than not, won't be well indexed, and Google probably won't pick them up.
And the homepage. page usually has a higher page rank than the inner pages. Do you want to put links on your home page and try to get links on the home page, like at the bottom or something, or do you want to have a separate page for links or a special inner page to have them on?
If you're going to do index page links, make sure it's a fair swap. Make sure that you both have, you know, high page rank, that you're well indexed, that you've got relevant content on the index. More often than not, if you're getting paid for an outbound index link, go ahead and do it. But I think that links directories or links pages work a lot better towards what you're trying to achieve, which is showing relevance in Google. So I would say put a resources or anchor text link from your index to a links directory. For smaller sites, use a single page worth of links, but no more than 30 or 40 links per page. For larger sites, you build a directory that each page is directed toward a specific type of link.
Okay, and then how many links should you go for? Like, is there an average for your number one listings, like how many they have, or how many would you shoot for if someone came to you saying they wanted to be number one on Google?
How many would I shoot for? I try to hit maybe 10 pages worth of links in a large directory with 20 to 30 links per page max. If you look at some of the higher-up sites in large key terms, they're actually paying for their page rank. They're paying a whole lot of money to get one site or two sites that are 8 or 9 page rank to link in from their index page or from all pages of their site.
So they're buying a link from another person?
Yeah, they're buying a link from a larger company or somebody who's got a large number of high page rank sites, and they're paying a lot of money for this on a monthly basis. If you're not willing to pay all that money, which I personally don't think is necessary, you build out those links pages, it'll do about the same thing.
Okay. And once we got our link exchange going, I know you said that's just one part of it. What else do you need to do to get listed high?
It's important to have your title tags properly displayed. It needs to be short, sweet, describes the site, possibly add one keyword for the whole site and then one direct keyword for the title of the page. All search engines use that to list your site. So if your title tag says you are, let's say, a hosting company and you want to market toward a specific hosting niche, you'll put your niche keyword, so let's say image hosting. That will put that in your title tag, so when Google pulls you up, image hosting is right there in the title.
Okay. Then what about meta tags?
All your meta tags, your descriptions, your keywords, you need to be really careful in how you use them. You can put anywhere from 8 to about 15, now that's absolute maximum, keywords inside your meta tags, but you've got to make sure you keep them within whatever niche you're aiming for.
Describe what a meta tag is first and what it's used for.
Meta tags are basically a hidden piece of code on your site. They're not visible to anybody other than the title tag. And when the search engine reads through them, they find information based on your site in a short, easy-to-understand way. So your meta keywords tag, for example, has all of the parts of your site within it that you're aiming to reach high in the search engines. Your description is going to be displayed in Google. So you're going to take that description and say, this is what I'm about. You know, very short, sweet, and easy to understand.
And should the meta tag be the same on virtually all your pages in the site?
To a certain extent, you want to try and change every page. Now, if you're going to use hosting, I'm going to keep using that because right now I'm working on a hosting site. But, for example, if you're aiming for hosting, you're going to use the word hosting in your meta tags everywhere. But if you've got specific pages toward niche industries in hosting, you're going to add those keywords to those.
On the images, should you use an alt tag with your keywords in them?
Image-related keywords. If you want to describe the picture and use a keyword in it, that's fine, but don't run 30, 40 keywords within an alt tag.
Okay, so just do like one keyword that relates,
or a short sentence that relates to the site and the image.
Can you describe, Greg, what a alt tag on an image is and how this is used in a website and the best way to list that image?
It's a way to describe the image being viewed. In certain countries, you have to use alt tags for different legal reasons in order for people to read the content if they're disabled in some way. Alt tags are a descriptive way of showing what the image is without actually seeing the image.
So give me an example. Let's say I have a website and I'm selling staplers, and there's a picture of a stapler up on my website. So is that alt tag what I name the picture of that stapler?
It's what you name the picture, or better yet, you would use the name of the company that the stapler was from. In other words, this is a swingline stapler with the model number.
So, for example, if someone was blind and they had a reader that read the page, it can't read a graphic, of course, but it'll read the alt tag for that graphic.
Right, it'll present the alt tag verbally. Don't make up codes for them, and don't present them as a string of the same keyword over and over and over, which you see a lot.
I see. Is that going to count against you in the search engine?
Very, 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 very badly.
Okay.
Two words I've come across regarding keyword placement on the page is prominence and also density. How do those come into play?
Keyword prominence is making your keywords a little bit more obvious to these search engine spiders. A common trick to use to do that is to bold out a certain keyword and then later on in the content link that keyword to another page within your site or back to your index page if you're already deep within the site, showing the search engine spiders that these words are more important. Now that would be prominence. Now density is how many times those keywords are placed within the content. On average, you don't want to do more than one, maybe two keywords max per paragraph. I usually stick to one. And you're going to want to variate them between bolding and using them as links.
You were telling me once you removed a key term for a site and from the index page and it took a couple positions right off.
Yeah, I have one of the owners of the hotels write a two-paragraph little article saying this month at the hotel. And I add the SEO portions to it, and I missed one. It was his keyword plus the term hotel, and for example, it was Galena Hotel. And he types out the article, I put Galena Hotel in there once, when every other time I've used it twice. Within 2 weeks, we noticed a drop of two positions on the first page. Normally, we're number one. We were number three. I replaced it, and just a few days ago, actually, the placement went back up to number one. So such a small, little, subtle thing can cause not horrible damage, but slight damage.
You hear that Google updates the search engines or crawls the web every 30 days. Is that accurate, or how often do they crawl the Internet? And what I'm trying to determine is, if I make SEO changes on my site, how soon can I possibly and potentially see those changes affect in a beneficial way?
What I can tell you for a fact is that although they do crawl on a monthly basis, they are not always crawling to re-index. They're not always crawling to change your position or change the positions on their index. Sometimes they're crawling just to double-check you to see if anything has changed. I would say a maximum of time before you will see anything happen is up to 3 months, but if your site is regularly spidered, it may be less time. I see changes sometimes as short as 2 to 3 weeks if I catch it just right.
Now, how about eBay? I hear that Google crawls eBay daily, like eBay has a special deal with them because their content is so vast. Is that true?
The more content you have, the more content that's constantly changing, the more often they're likely to come back. If they see something change on your site every single day of the week, they may come back almost every day just to check it. It's not a special deal. It's just how much stuff goes through eBay on a regular basis. Another good thing is to use Google's webmaster tools. I mean, they built webmaster tools for people to do their own search marketing to find out how they're getting indexed. It's a great free tool to use to find out what's going on with your site organically.
And where do you find those tools?
Google.com/webmasters, actually.
Hyperlink text. Describe what that is and how relevant you think it is.
Hyperlink text within your site is always a good thing, especially if it's keyword specific, to show relevant keyword links. Using, let's say, once again, image hosting as a specific key term, if you're linking from your index page with those key terms to a page that only sells image hosting, you're going to show that keyword is relevant to that page.
Give an example for someone who doesn't know what hyperlink text is. Give an example what that would look like on a site.
Any links you see on a site, anything that says click here that's not an image, or sometimes you'll see it, especially on sites like Wikipedia, you'll see blue words all over their site that when you run over them with your mouse, they'll underline themselves. Those are hyperlinks. Those are anchor text links, another term I use.
All right, any tips for when you're creating those that Google or the other search engines like? What should I keep in mind when I'm creating hyperlink text? Is click here something good, or should I use a keyword instead of click here?
It depends on what you're trying to do. Now, using a keyword is good for organic search marketing, but using click here or something like that is better for call to action, which is another term in marketing, which I'm sure we'll go over at some point or another. If you're using links on your site to show Google what's relevant, you're going to use a key term. If you're trying to get a customer to perform a specific action, you're going to use an action word. Click here, start now, there's those calls to action, those calls to get somebody to do something, which are also good to have in text link form sometimes.
Could you combine them, like click here to start your image hosting?
To a certain extent you could, but it's not going to have a detrimental effect against your SEO, but you may get some irrelevant rankings for stuff. You may get a ranking for click here, which is completely useless.
Right.
There's a chance that that could overpower the image hosting key term, and then you'll have an issue.
Okay.
Should hyperlinked text be underlined always, or is that not necessary these days?
It's kind of more of how you're going to run your site's design. You can have it constantly underlinked. You can have it highlight itself when you scroll over it with the mouse. It's more up to the design. It doesn't have to be underlined for Google's preference or anything. They don't, as far as I can tell, seem to care if it's underlined or not.
We're talking a lot about Google, but what about the other search engines like Yahoo and MSN? Are they working similar to Google, or are they somehow using their same technology? And how does your company approach the other search engines as well when we're talking about all this stuff?
The reason I speak of Google as often as I do is because the other search engines are a little bit easier to handle. They don't go off the same technology. They're not as relevant as Google usually. Sometimes I'll even notice that Google's results, Yahoo's results, and MSN results will differ according to who's got them first. If Google's got you on the top, MSN and Yahoo may drop you slightly. Because they're trying to find what's more relevant, they are slightly in competition in that aspect.
Having keywords in your URL for the domain name and in like the directory name or a page name, how does that affect your search engine ranking?
That all depends. If you've got a domain name that's keyword-keyword-keyword-keyword-keyword-, you know, off to infinity, that's not going to help you any. If the name of your company happens to have a keyword in it, that's a bonus. If you find a domain that is just your keywords with no spaces, no dashes, nothing funny, that's a bonus. When it comes to page names, it's always good to have the specific page keyword in the page name.
So, for example, like, it would be in the format keyterm.html?
Yeah, or keyterm.cfm or whatever technology you're using.
Okay. And then bold or larger text like the H1 or H2 tags, I know you mentioned that before as far as keyword prominence. How important would you say that is, and do you want to use H1 and H2 tags?
Let's describe what an H1 or H2 tag is first.
H1, H2, the H is, to put it as general as possible, stands for header or heading or page title, if you would. It's another way to describe your site, but at the same time, you shouldn't use it as your only description. You should use your meta for your main description of the page that you're on. H1 tags, it's actually not suggested to use your keywords for each page in your H1 tags. You can use your site name. I often use my site name, which it may or may not have a keyword in it, but you're not aiming for that. H2 tags, on the other hand, are almost a subtitle, a page title. So if you think about it like this, H1 tags would be your site title, H2 tags would be more your page title or page description in another format, in a visible format to the customer.
And next, the number of words you have in your title tag, the meta tags, and the body, this is how much text you're going to have in the body. Does that play a big effect in how you rank in the search engine?
The more content you have and the more you update that content or grow it, the better in the body. When it comes to your meta tags, you want to keep everything short, sweet, and to the point. There's a big difference between the two there. The reason being is you can have 400, 800, 1,000 words per page of content on your site, and that's just more for Google to read, more for Google to eat and index. The meta tags, however, you want to keep short and sweet, so you're not keyword spamming to the search engine.
Can you keyword spam with the descriptions of your actual HTML text, you know, in the actual page? You know, your words, your descriptions, if you're using words like business opportunity and make money and things like that, can Google pick that up just by scanning the text of your HTML pages and penalize you for the types of descriptive words you're using?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, I'm real adamant about this. When I joined the corporation I work for, when I joined First Marketing Group, most of their sites were in one form or another keyword spamming. Keyword spam is part of what the industry termed black hat SEO, or the dark side of the force, if you want to go as geeky as I go. What happens is that you can put them in your alt tags. You can put them in your description, in your meta tags, your meta keywords tag. You can put it in the body. You can hide it underneath the color of your website. So if you have a white site with white text, customers may not see it, but Google still indexes it, and you've got tons of the same keyword over and over. Now, what'll happen with most black hat stuff most bad SEO methods is Google will index it, push it up maybe for a month, and then either by its own math or by somebody finding it out and notifying Google, which there is a tool in Google's webmaster to notify about spammy content sites. One form or another, you'll get blacklisted and dropped off search results for all the engines. In other words, you won't be able to, no matter what you do, fix it until you actually contact Google and tell them that you fixed the problem.
All right. What's the importance of customer tracking, analytics, and data mining in online sales today?
I would say that it's always been important, but now so more than ever, due to the fact that new technologies have come out which allow you to truly define every single customer that comes through your site from start to finish. If you think about it like this, in the earlier days of television, Nielsen created a box, a way for you to decide what direction TV should go in by watching commercials and television shows. They record and count the hours of TV you watched, et cetera, et cetera. In this way, they were kind of doing analytics. They were data mining for the TV industry. Now, we've taken that same idea and grown it to the point where you can discover who your customer is, how they've traveled through your site, where they came from, whether it be organic, your banners, your emails, your pay-per-click marketing, offline advertising. You can find out where they've come from, where they've gone, and what they've purchased through analytics. How often they come back to purchase again. I mean, the demographics that you can glean from analytics is probably the most important business tool out there today.
Okay, pretty interesting.
Is that software available to the average guy?
There's a couple different levels. You've got Google Analytics, which is a free software. You put a small piece of code on the bottom of all the pages of your site, and Google then takes those bits of code and tracks the people going through your site. Now, they don't have as many options as some of the tools which you have to pay for. Web Trends is probably the second stage up. It's another way to tell what they're doing, but not quite as detailed and in-depth as the tool I use now. The tool I use now is called Omniture Analytics. They have a set of web-based tools, Omniture.com. A set of web-based tools which include Omniture Discover, which gives you 3D modeling and mapping of what your customer is doing on the site. Omniture Site Catalyst, which is your basic analytics, your demographics, even your technology, what type of browser people are using, what size monitors, what their resolutions are. You can find out all that information. They have something called Omniture Search Center, which will actually control, monitor, and organize your pay-per-click marketing.
Is this a tool you generally will always use when you bring on a new client to see what's going on with their site?
Honestly, it depends on the kind of money they wish to invest. Omniture is not cheap. It is probably the most expensive thing right now I use. But I'll tell you, I've used Google Analytics for sites where people can't really afford Omniture. I've used Web Trends once or twice and don't really like its information. It's not always clean. Omniture is worth every penny, and it'll not only show you what your marketing is doing, but help you improve your marketing by changing little things like form fill-out sections and bits of information on your site that aren't doing well. You can instantly change them and turn them into money makers.
What do you see down the road with Google? Is there any technology that could make Google and Yahoo and MSM obsolete that's in the horizon that you know about that maybe the public doesn't know about that could change this whole SEO game?
I don't know if Google can be toppled all that easily. I've seen a number of people try to come out with interesting ideas. There was a search engine recently that I found which is doing live search assistance. They actually have a real person inside their search engine. You click a button and you tell them what you're looking for and they find it for you. All these little great ideas that people are coming up with trying to take a piece of Google's market. But at this point, I think they've got too good of a grip, they're too strong to really say that I know within the next 5 years, 10 years, anyone's going to be able to topple.
Greg, you're giving away a lot of secrets here. Why in the world would you tell everyone these things so openly?
Because the explanation of my services and what I'm capable of using these techniques is how I treat all of my clients. I believe that with all the simple, powerful tools that I'm giving out today, they can leave the more difficult job of creating a full-scale web marketing solution that really hits home, that really makes an income. They can leave all of that to me.
Okay. Besides Google, what other search engines do you focus on, and what are the main differences?
Well, we went over a little bit. We touched on that. I focus on the big three. I focus on Google, Yahoo, and MSN or Live, and I don't believe that any of them should be left out. Although Google has most of the market share, I've gained top positions for a relatively new redesign of the site, I've gained first place positions in MSN and Live almost instantly. Google is a little harder of a nut to crack, so to speak, but to have all three of them working for you at the same time is actually quite important.
How about Word files up on your website in PDF files? Are there any strategies that someone who's offering a lot of white papers or PDF downloads can use to benefit in the search engines? I mean, the way you name the files, how long should the names of the files be? Does Google pick up Word or PDF, or is it good to have both or one? You know, anything on that?
Google will index PDF files to a certain extent. They will show rankings. I've seen quite a few recently that are coming up. Google will index doc files. They'll index pretty much anything that's got content on it. I do suggest that if you're going to put files up, make sure you use proper naming conventions for everything you do. That's no spaces, no funky characters. Always be straightforward with all of your naming.
What about underscore? So if you call it money making report, you do money underscore make. Is that okay?
That's fine. If you're going to do that, just to make it easier for others to read, that makes perfect sense, and it's not going to hinder you in any way. Just don't leave blank spaces because they become a piece of code later on.
How about the length of an actual web page? For instance, I personally have some very long web pages with lots of content that could be, if you print out 20, 30 pages. Is that something that could work against me?
I don't believe that having a lengthy piece of content. You're not talking names of the page, the actual content.
Yeah, content.
No, I don't believe that can harm you in any way. Now, when you do something where you have incredibly long pages, you have to watch for using keywords too much because at this point you're really drawing out how much content you have. And if you're aiming for a particular market, you're going to want to put your keywords in it a bunch. But you've got to understand that after a certain point, now, I can't give you a set number on this, but after, I'd say, 5 to 10, maybe max, instances of the same keyword, you're going to start diving into the spam area a little bit.
Okay, what about the size of type? So let's say I have a page with a headline, and I've got an 18-point veranda. Is there any type of text size that could work against you? Is there a type of font that Google likes better or the search engines like better? Or are there any fonts or size headlines that could work against you? Anything like that?
Well, that's a pretty funny question. I was talking about that with the head of the web development team over at my office earlier today, and he was asking me, well, I believe we use 10-point Arial for almost everything we do, and he wants to put up a new company site, a company figurehead, and asked me if he could use a different text. And I looked at him and said, well, although there are a few SEO forums and whatnot which may argue with me, I don't believe that any particular text other than unreadable text or text that's ridiculously large or ridiculously small really matters.
And the size of the text?
When I say ridiculous, I mean you're not going to put a 36 or a 42-point text on your site, or you're not going to put a 6-point text on your site because no one's going to be able to read it. Other than that, I don't think there's an issue.
Right. And how about sitemaps? Are sitemaps something that can benefit a website owner? And if so, can you recommend any kind of sitemap software that can allow someone to do that easily?
Well, when it comes to sitemaps, they're extremely important for not only your search engine purposes, but also for people who aren't very web savvy, who may want to find specific information. Sitemaps sometimes help certain people find information. There's also two different types of sitemaps. You've got your visual sitemap, what you see on the website. And then you should always have an XML sitemap, a sitemap that you give to Google that says, this is every link within our site in XML format. It's easier for them to index that.
How do you give it to Google? You just have it up on your site?
Once again, Webmaster Tools, google.com/webmasters, has a section in there that's the sitemap section where you can actually enter your XML sitemap to Google. A sitemap generator, the one I actually use, is called rorweb.com.
It sounds like there's a lot of trial and error involved as far as getting your site to the top. I remember you showing me a few resort sites that you had listed number one on Google. How long did it take to get up to number one, and how many changes did you have to make?
Like I said, it's only a trial and error situation if you're not sure where you're headed. If you're not exactly sure what you're marketing, if you don't put every one of these tricks into play at the same time, it may take you quite a while to get up in rankings. As long as I've been doing this for myself or doing this for other companies, It's never taken me more than a maximum of 3 months to get the top rankings that I really want for whatever key terms. Now, if you do everything that we've talked about so far, you'll guarantee yourself a top spot. Now, I'm not going to say you'll guarantee yourself number one. There's quite a few things I probably won't mention today that I use to get those one top positions. Once you've got yourself maybe in the top five, you need to make sure you've got all of your ducks in a row. You've got a site schematic. You stick to that plan. Your network is strong links. You've got banners up, very good newsletter-based email campaigns running. Pay-per-click, provided you don't get too far with it, can be helpful. And community marketing strategies to create that. No matter what happens, your SEO is always going to run, but you want those extra bits to boost your income at all times.
I've heard some people say that Bing and Google AdWords helps their search engine in the free listings. Have you found that the case with any of the sites you've done?
Actually, I haven't found that pay-per-click helps organic in any way other than showing your listing above organic. Now, sometimes people mistake that and say, well, look, I'm number one, when truth is you're number two in the pay-per-click listings or number one in the pay-per-click listings. Now, that's not to say that your organic has been improved at all. Also, I think that if you're a local business or a business that has local branches, that getting yourself listed in Google Local can be incredibly beneficial, in Yahoo Local as well. Incredibly beneficial because then you will get those top positions, even if your SEO has not come in yet, for your local key terms.
Okay. Are there any websites and your favorites that you go to regularly to look for search engine tips or try to keep on top of the changes in their algorithms?
I actually constantly run RSS feeds from both Webmaster World and SEO Chat. I don't always agree with everything they say, mind you, but they are a great place for somebody who's just getting into it or who maybe knows a little bit or wants to know a lot more. Webmasterworld.com and SEO Chat.
And what's some of the software tools that you use? I know you mentioned IDP, and I'm not sure what a couple others I use.
Other than IDP, which really does cover quite a few bases for me, it covers link exchanges, it helps decide what keyword density it's using, it also does a great job of picking apart your competitors' sites and finding out why they're doing better than you. Great tool that thing has in it. Other than Omniture or any analytics tool and IDP, I don't really use any other softwares other than what you'd use to build the sites, be it Macromedia, Go Live, whatever you prefer. Macromedia, I feel, has cleaner code. But whatever you're going to use, other than that, it's just knowing what you're going for the minute you start your site and never giving up.
How about when you're designing your site? Let's say you're using a front page or Dreamweaver, older versions compared to the updated versions. Is it important to keep updating your website design software? Any benefit there?
Yeah, tons of benefit. With front page, as a matter of fact, with each version of front page that comes forward, I've noticed that you can have a lot of spacing. Little blank spots where maybe you press the space bar one too many times or, you know, an issue where it'll just create these empty spaces. The updated version that just came out definitely cleared up that problem.
What version is that?
That's the 07.
So the 07 front page?
Yeah, I just recently purchased the 07 office. I don't use front page. I still believe that Adobe and Macromedia do better work, but I have noticed improvements.
And then what was the website for IDP?
Actually, you can type in A-X-A-N-D-R-A, Xandra.com. That's the company name that they use to sell both IDP and Aurelis. They come as a package bundle, but it's a great piece of software.
Okay. Sometimes a site gets banned completely from Google. What do you do in that case? Is there any way to get relisted on there or find out why they banned you?
Well, finding out why they banned you, probably you're going to know. If you're getting banned, there's going to be a reason. Whether it be you're using spam techniques that we spoke about earlier, or you're doing something that's wholeheartedly against the law. And if you fix the problem, which I'm sure at that point, if you get banned or blacklisted from search engines, you know what you've done. To fix the problem, there's a page on Google. It's called a re-inclusion request. If you type that up in Google, it'll pop up right away.
And what do you do?
You reinsert your domain. It's almost like the initial submission that you did when you submitted your site to Google in the first place.
And are there actually people who really look at it?
It mostly is done by the algorithm, by the spiders themselves. I think I've rarely actually spoken to a Google employee and said, hey, I need to get re-included. One guy that came to me and said, somebody blacklisted me, I don't know what to do, how do I fix it? I actually had to call and say, I tried re-inclusion, but I can't get picked up, what's going on, and they fixed the problem.
You were able to get someone on the phone?
Yes.
Is there a special number or place that someone could go to do that without going through all the red tape, you know, getting to someone to use that technique that you use?
No, not only are they extremely secretive and don't like people to contact them, there's no special phone number. I have to call and do it the same way as everybody else and wait the time and handle the hassle. I am.
And so what's the process and what can a potential client expect from you? What would be the first process and how do you work with clients? And give a little feedback on what someone can expect with you and an idea on fees and how that works.
Well, I have recently gotten back into doing all of the work for a bunch of local people here in Orlando that are outside of the corporate job, which I've mentioned. And I'm building a site dedicated to letting everybody read all the tricks that I have and how I use them. And there are forms on codesource-seo.com, which are just simple request forms to find out more information. Usually the first step is for someone to give me what their idea is and what they're trying to reach, and I will put together a marketing plan at no cost to show them what they're capable of, and we go from there. Now, I have different levels of marketing that I do for people, for simple SEO cleanup, just to take care of all the basics, your keywords, your meta tags, you know, all the stuff we've spoken about, up to handling all of the analytics, pay-per-click, banner marketing, full media solutions.
I see. So do you have a team you work with? Do you outsource a lot of your work, or are you physically doing all this stuff yourself?
Well, I don't myself do artwork, but I have a network of people that I've made friends and associates over the years who do anything from database design to Flex and Flash, Photoshop and imagery, and then I take care of all the SEO and background stuff to get the market going.
When you're looking at the pages and you're deciding what's the keyword here, renaming them, that kind of stuff.
I handle all of that myself. I wouldn't trust it to anybody else. Did want to go over a little bit on the viral marketing, community-based marketing front, just to say that it's not a brand new thing, but it's one of those things that if you pick up a nice community niche and you start gaining people who trust you, who start saying, I've used this product, I like this product, use viral marketing to your best advantage. It's a combination of word of mouth and web wizardry that will always get your site into a great income stream.
How about email? Are you privy to any information on the future of email? I know personally I'm having trouble getting emails through and receiving emails and with the spam and some emails just disappearing. Any info on that?
Tons. I do a lot of email marketing at my job. It's part of what comes with the territory. But the problem people have is they'll purchase lists, or they'll have lists that are a number of years old that have plenty of holes in them, so to speak, to bounce or to be redirected to places that no longer exist. What you have to make sure you do with all your websites is keep in contact with your customers. Keep in contact with your current customers, with customers who first visit the site. Make sure they know that if they sign up for your newsletter, or sign up for your e-alert or e-blast or however you want to phrase it, make sure that they know they're getting something out of the deal so that they have a reason to sign up, and you'll always have a fresh list of people to contact with no worries about spam.
Well, if you've got a list of 5,000 names, you know, in an autoresponder and they're opt-in names, you're saying over a year many of those emails could still be obsolete and work against you because they're bouncing back or something?
Yeah, absolutely. You got to keep the list as fresh as possible. You can't keep the same list for a year and just rehash it over and over without adding new names to it, or else you're going to start noticing that your bounce rate gets bigger.
We keep adding new names, but we don't delete names off of it unless they unsubscribe.
To a certain extent, that's fine, but you also got to watch for the ones that are bouncing out. If you see a name that's been bouncing out of your system 2-3 times, get rid of it.
Yeah, the ISPs look for that, and if they see a whole bunch of bounces coming from your mailing, they'll think you're just trying to spam their people.
If I'm sending out through AWeber, how do I know if the email's bouncing out?
Some of the third-party ones have it where it removes bounces for you automatically. I'm not sure if AWeber does or not. You might have to contact them and ask them what they do with the bounces and if there's any way to find out.
Another good way to run it, even if you don't want to trust your third-party provider, is make sure the address that the bounces go to goes to you. And you can take the email addresses that have bounced, and it's a little bit slower of a process than getting someone to do it for you automatically, I'll admit. But if push comes to shove, you'll at least know every single name that's bounced.
That's a good idea, and I should be able to set that up with AWeber. Can it work against you having multiple sites all linking together, like with a resource page, where the resource page links to each one of the other sites?
No, that's a common mistake. For a number of years, that worked rather well, but having a links directory under some random domain and then linking all your other sites with it no longer really functions properly. You'll notice that a lot of link exchange partners you'll get will say, if it's not from your domain, we will not link with you. And for good reason. Google sees that as a form of link spam.
Let's say I have 5 different sites, but I have a resource page on each site, but the resource page is the same.
Provided it's from the same domain, each one has its own separate page, then you're fine even if it's the same links.
Like a different IP address or on a different class C.
Yes, class differently.
I have 5 different websites, all on Nick's server, but all under different URL names on a different page.
Well, if you're trying to market all of them hard, and they're all in the same category of what you're selling, throw Nick a couple bucks and tell him to give you a couple extra IPs.
That's the end of this interview with Nick and Greg and myself. I hope this has been helpful for you, and I hope it's given you some ideas understanding the importance of search engine optimization. For more information and consulting on SEO, you can contact Nick at marketingmastermind.com. That's marketingmastermind.com. Thanks for listening.